Good afternoon. We'll call the meeting of the Senate Resources Committee to order. Let the record reflect it's approximately 3:33 p.m. on this Wednesday afternoon, March 16th, 2011. We do have a credit beginning on my right, Senator French, Senator Wilikowski, to my far left, Senator Stevens, Senator Stedman, co-chair, Senator Wagner, and myself, Senator Paskvan, so we do have a quorum. We welcome Gavel to Gavel here with us today. We hope they can stay with us, and hopefully the public will be interested in the issues that are raised in this production tax analysis. Today's hearing, the Department of Revenue is going to continue its presentation of Senate Bill 49, and I do encourage due diligence and a thorough vetting of each of the issues that is part of this bill, and how those elements combine into the one overall arching tax policy that we generally understand as ACES. I would point out that all persons who appear before this committee are entitled to respect, even though we may ultimately disagree as to particular points or the conclusion that may be reached. And so I would hope that all members would be respectful to the committee members or to the people that do appear before this committee. But anyway, today we are going to hear from Mr. Lenny. Oh, yes, and we do have Senator Giesel in the crowd. We do welcome you. Are there any other elected officials out there? Seeing none, but we welcome you. Anyway, today we are going to hear from Mr. Lenny Dees. He is the audit master with the Department of Revenue, and we are going to hear his presentation on oil and gas tax credits and how those are relevant to the issue of progressivity and the ACES tax structure. We have approximately 90 minutes with Mr. Dees today, and it's my intent to hear that entire presentation today. And so anyway, let's get going so we can question Mr. Dees. Mr. Tangeman, you're coming forward as well, so you please make yourself comfortable and identify yourselves and provide the presentation on credits.
Good afternoon, Chairman, members of the committee. My name is Bruce Tangeman. I'm Deputy Commissioner for the Department of Revenue. With me is Lenny Dees, Audit Master for the Tax Division. Lenny has been around the Capitol for quite a bit here the last month or so, giving these presentations on the production tax credit system. Obviously, it's a big part of the ACES legislation. We believe it's been a very effective part of that legislation. He will go into the technical explanations. There's two different types of tax credits, those that a producer would use who has a tax liability, and those that an explorer would use who does not have a tax liability. That's the biggest difference between the types of tax credits. But I will turn it over to Mr. Dees, and he can take it from here.
And welcome, Mr. Dees. Please identify yourself.
Thank you. My name is Lenny Dees, and I'm an audit master with the Department of Revenue. And I'm here today to talk about tax credits, to kind of give a description of the various types of credits that we have available under Alaska Statute 4355, and to share some of the kind of the activity that we've seen in these credits since their inception. For overview of my talk today, I plan to go into four different areas, starting with the types of production tax credits, and then talk about, as Mr. Tangeman mentioned, the credits that are applied against, that we have seen being applied against production tax liability, the credits that have been issued in the form of transferable tax credit certificates, and then lastly, give some information about the refunds that the state has paid out since inception. Okay. Basically, we have seven different types of credits. We have capital expenditure credits, alternative tax credits for oil and gas exploration, net operating loss carry forward credits, transitional investment expenditure credits, additional non-transferable tax credits, well lease expenditures credit, and we have the Cook Inlet jackup rig credit. This slide is kind of an illustration of when these particular tax credit came into effect. Under the Alaska Statute 4355, the first credit that was adopted was the 4355-025 credit, which was historically known as the expiration credit, came into being in 2003. At the inception of PPT on April 1st, 2006, there were various other credits that were put into law. Probably the most popular credit or the most prevalent credit, the credits for qualified capital expenditures and carry forward annual losses. We have the transitional investment credits, the new area development credit, the small producer credit. With the advent of ACES in 2007, various aspects of these credits changed, and I will go into that when I talk in detail about the particular credits. Last year's legislation, we saw two new credits come into being. One was a well lease expenditure credit for areas south of 68 degrees north latitude, and also the Cook Inlet jackup rig credit. First credit I'm going to talk about is the capital expenditure credit. The actual technical name for that particular credit is tax credits for certain losses and expenditures. Under Section 4355-023A1, a company can get 20% of qualified capital expenditures. Now, qualified capital expenditures are defined in Section AS 4355-023 as being qualified capital expenditures as defined under USC 26, regardless of how a company choose to use those credits on their federal tax return. But the definition of qualified capital expenditures fit the definition under the Internal Revenue Code.
If I could interject, following up on the, Mr. Tangeman said that the credits have been effective under the ACES tax structure, and I was wondering, do you believe that this particular capital expenditure credit has been effective?
Well, it depends on what you mean by effective. In terms of companies, applying for the credits, yes, companies are actually incurring these type of expenditures and are applying for the credits. If you're talking about have these credits led to additional production or development, well, it just kind of depends on the company, and I cannot qualify that with yes or no as to whether if these credits have actually led to additional production. But under the statutes, the statute only says that the credits have to be qualified capital expenditures in accordance with IRC 26, USC 26. So,
Senator Willikowski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Can you expand a little bit upon what these credits can be used for? You say drilling, construction of facilities, new equipment, et cetera. Can you talk a little bit about the et cetera?
Well, it's whatever qualifies as a capital expenditure. It could be the purchase of vehicles, could be the improvement of buildings. Is any expenditure that qualifies as a capital expenditure?
Follow up.
Thank you. And is this for anywhere on the slope, any infill drilling, exploration drilling?
Primarily, we see this credit in developing areas that are being developed for oil production, areas that have been developed. And it's not just on the slope. I mean, this credit is a statewide credit, so we see these credits in Cook Inlet in addition to activities on the North Slope.
For the record should reflect, we've been joined by Senator McGuire, so follow up.
Yeah, thank
Senator
you.
Lowcastle.
Is, and it, this is, this credit can be added on to other credits? Or,
typically, this credit, expenditures that qualify for this credit can also qualify, can also be part of the expenditures that will, if it generates a net operating loss carry forward situation for a particular taxpayer. So a dollar of capital expenditure under A1 could attract not only the 20% credit under this particular statute, but also be part of the expenditures that lead to a net operating loss under 023B. So,
if I could just, and then Senator Lulikowski with a follow-up, are those by that, is that for companies that are, so to speak, newly arrived to Alaska as compared to established in Alaska? The net operating loss aspect?
The net operating loss credit could be available to any company. It just depends on if they have a net operating loss. In a particular segment.
Do you have a breakdown of which expenditures were used for drilling, construction, new equipment, et cetera?
We do not have that breakdown. Under our current statutes, we do require the companies to, as they either apply for these credits or take them against their tax liability, to provide us information with the amount of capital expenditures that generate the credits. For those companies that actually apply for the credits with the department, we do get a breakdown of the expenditures, like a listing of the AFEs, and we go so far as to look at invoices that generated these capital expenditures. For those companies that take the credits against their liability, offset them against the liabilities that they pay to the state, there's a requirement for them to report those expenditures on an annual basis during the true-up, which occurs at the end of March every year for the previous year. However, at this point, we have not required those companies to give us a breakdown of those particular expenditures.
If I could make a request, Mr. Chair, if you could provide us with a breakdown of the information that you do have, I think that would be very helpful for us. Which of these are being used for drilling facilities, equipment, et cetera, in as detailed a form as possible? I think that would be very helpful for us.
Good.
Senator French.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and welcome to the committee, Mr. Dees. My understanding is that as far as how we define capital expenditure credit, we look to IRS rulings or federal definitions?
The federal definition. The definition in 26 USC.
Okay, thank you. And I think I remember actually running over to the law library to do some research on that way back when we were passing ACES. Could you just maybe for the listening public contrast a capital expenditure with an operating expenditure just so they kind of understand what it is we're talking about?
Okay, a capital expenditure is an expenditure for which there's going to be a benefit to that company that lasts beyond the a year, say. It's going to give future benefits as opposed to an operating expenditure, which would be one that's only for a particular period. So if the benefit from that expenditure is consumed in that particular year, it's considered an operating expenditure.
Just as a follow-up, for example, wages to employees, those are all operating costs, correct?
It depends on what the wages are used for. Wages that are used or utilized in the construction of capital assets do become part of the capital costs of a particular asset.
Good. Good clarification. Thank you. And from your chart on I guess your pages don't have numbers. I skipped ahead to the
upper left hand.
Oh, very good. 18, from your chart on page 18. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. It sure looks like the amount of capital credits being claimed is going up every year pretty substantially. We passed ACES in 2007. 2008, the capital credits were 219. I'm guessing these are $1 million. And it goes all the way up to almost double that for this year, $391 million. So this is something that looks like evidence to me of increased capital spending on the North Slope, largely since we passed ACES.
It does reflect that, yes. It is reflective of the capital spend. Now, mind you, the latter half of 2010 and all of 2011, it's based on estimated capital expenditures, particularly because 2010 will receive the true-ups for the 2010 actuals at the end of this month. And so that's why that number is considered an estimate, because half of 2010 is in that particular fiscal year number. And the 2011 is an estimate based on information we received from
follow-up center.
And that's the point I was actually going to follow up on. And the estimates are based not so much on information that you look into your crystal ball over, but they're numbers that are sent to you by the industry themselves, right? They say this is what we expect to spend next year, and the Department of Revenue goes, okay, great, and that way you can sort of prepare us for what you think the costs of the credits are going to be.
Yeah, and we pretty much just take a simple, you know, especially if it's an operating unit, primarily, predominantly the credits are going to be of this type, the 20% capital expenditure credit.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Deese. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Senator Willekoski.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. How long has this provision, 023A, been on the books? Is this an ACES product, or is this before ACES? Because I see you have some data here from
initially, through the chair, Senator Willekoski. Initially, the 023s came into effect with PPT. So April 1st, 2006.
Thank you, Mr. Deese. Please continue.
Okay, as I was, I was talking about the fact that these expenditures do also qualify for net operating loss carry forward if they, in addition to the non-capital expenditures, lead to a net operating loss for a particular taxpayer. The same expenditures in this particular category does not qualify for the expiration credit, and what that means is, if you have taken a credit for an expenditure under statute 025, you cannot claim that same expenditure under 023.
Senator Willekoski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
023A1, excuse me.
Does this apply to maintenance costs, 023A1?
Well, through the chair, Senator Willekoski, if the expenditure is considered capital, if it's maintenance work that's considered capital, now, typically maintenance work is operating in nature. You tend to think that maintenance is operating in nature, but so it really depends on if it's called maintenance because it's restoring something to its previous capacity or efficiency, and so I would think that very, very little maintenance would be considered capital. If you know, just that term to me denotes a non-capital type item, but there are some capital maintenance items.
If I just follow up on that, Mr. Chair, I know we see. You have some figures later on, which Senator French pointed out, about capital expenditure credits. When you say very little maintenance would be considered capital, are you applying that just to this capital expenditure credit, or are you applying that to all capital costs in general?
All capital costs in general.
So if I could just follow up. So if you're seeing increased capital expenditures on the North Slope, is it your opinion that that would likely not be due to maintenance?
In my opinion, what may be being called maintenance may be replacements of facilities. And it's, you know, it's difficult for me to say what people mean when they say these are maintenance expenditures. But in answer to your question, I would think that if it's true maintenance, it wouldn't be considered capital.
Through the chair, Senator Wilkowski, if I could follow up. There is some confusion, and people look at maintenance in different ways, but are you maintaining infrastructure that's 30 years old? There's depreciation life on equipment that is, you know, things need to be replaced after 25, 30 years. If they're replacing infrastructure like that, that is a capital investment, and therefore it would qualify for certain tax credits. It's in an existing field. It's the replacement of something that's been in use for many, many years to produce oil up to that point. But I think maintenance or exploration or things like that, people tend to look at on which side of the fence that capital expenditure is taking place. We look at it more of is what's the useful life of the piece of equipment. So if it's replacing something that's been in use for several years like that, it would qualify for capital credits.
Follow up, Senator Wilkowski.
In your reviewing the audits and looking at the expenses that have been provided, do you have a sense of what is being done on the North Slope? Is it in terms of capital costs?
Well, most of the information that we have actually audited to date have been more of the newly constructed capital costs on the slope. Mind you, we have audited through 2006, PPT was the only year that we've audited some of the older fields. So when you talk about maintenance capital, that's probably where you would see that. And we haven't seen a lot of that yet. As you remember, 2006 was a time when there were a lot of issues on the slope with pipes bursting and the like. But we haven't yet audited 2007, 2008, so I can't really say that we've seen a lot of maintenance costs. Now, for the type of capital we've seen for the taxpayers that have applied for transferable tax credit certificates, you know, the more the explorers or say the taxpayers that are going into new production, those are brand new construction of facilities, drilling of wells, and so very, I would say, next to no, not any maintenance in those expenditures that we've actually seen.
Please continue.
Just one more point about this capital credit. It must be spread over 2 years. Initially, under PPT, credit could be taken in 1 year, and then under ACES, it was split, except for last year, for all expenditures incurred south of 68 degrees north latitude, the expenditures, the credits could be taken over 1 year. And these credits may be converted into transferable tax credit certificates, maybe cash with the state or transferred. Next, we're going to talk about the exploration credits. Hit it two times. Yeah, one more. Okay. Capital credit for exploration activity under 023A2. It's a 20% credit for qualifying expenditures related to G&G exploration or in connection with an exploration well. This credit requires that data be submitted to DNR. Again, must be spread over 2 years. These expenditures may also be part of the expenditures that qualify for NOL carry forward. So these capital expenditures, along with non-capital expenditures, may lead to a net operating loss situation. These credits may be transferred may be converted to transferable tax credit certificates and may be either cash refunded by the state or transferred to other taxpayers.
Senator Wilkowski.
Thank you. Do you have a – so just so I'm clear, exploration credits cannot be combined with the 023A1 credits, capital expenditure credits?
Through the chair, Senator Wilkowski, when you say cannot be combined, could you –
could you get a credit for under 023A2 and 023A1 for the same thing?
Through the chair, Senator Wilkowski, no, you cannot.
If I could just follow up. Can you explain to me what is considered an exploration credit? Is that if someone pierces a new hole on the slope, spuds a new hole, is that considered an exploration if it's infield? Or if you could briefly explain how they define what an exploration is.
Through the chair, Senator Wilkowski, I don't think I could give a technical explanation for this, but this particular type of credit would be where you would have an exploration well drilled, say, within a unit, where a company is within that unit trying to delineate the field or find a new pocket of oil within that unit. The thing about this credit is that it doesn't, this particular activity would not qualify for the 025 credit, which is a 30 or 40% credit, because of it wouldn't have it wouldn't meet the qualifications of the distance from the existing unit or a distance from an existing well. So it would be the same type of activity you would find under the section 4355025, except for it would have occurred within the limits that credit prescribes.
So if I could just follow up. So my understanding is I've been up to the North Slope and I've gone on some of the tours that they offer to see what's going on in the fields, and they basically take the rigs and then move them over and then drill a new well. Would that be considered a new exploration well?
If it's considered an exploration well, first of all, if it is indeed an exploration well, it would qualify for this particular credit. Now, you asked me, would that be considered an exploration well? I don't think I'm qualified to say that. It depends on the facts of, you know, are they going for the same geological target? You know, all of that is determined by DNR. That's why we have the submission to DNR for certain data.
And if I could, Mr. Chair, I guess at some point I'd like to hear from DNR about, because I've heard there's 150 plus wells drilled last year, and I guess I'd be curious how they delineate what's exploration and what's not exploration. And
you mean occurring within the same unit?
Occurring within the unit, outside the unit. Whether it's got to be a certain distance. I know we have the distance credits under 025, but I'm just trying to understand. Everyone's making a big deal of the fact that we've had no new exploration, or we've had one, and I'm trying to understand in my mind what, you know, if we had 150, what's the difference? So.
Senator Stedman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just as a point of clarification, just sitting here listening to the discussion between the qualified capital credit at 20%, the 23A, and why it can't be stacked on top of the 23B, the carry forward credit. Maybe another way to explain it, and Mr. Dees can adjust the response here if I step all over my tongue. But when you do a capital expenditure, say of $100 million, you're going to get a $20 million credit goes against your taxes. But on that $100 million capital expenditure, you're going to still depreciate it on your tax schedule, just like normal. But you're going to take that $100 million under 23B, and you're allowed to write it off immediately this year. And that would enable you to knock down your income. And if you don't have any income, then you can carry it forward at 25% a year and burn it up. Is that not correct?
Through the chair, Senator Stabenow, that does describe what happens with the 023B.
So when you, Mr. Chairman, when you look at the stimulus effect, you got the 20% credit, but then you got the immediate write-off of the capital expenditure, but you don't lose the depreciation shield going forward, both for state and federal income tax. That's a pretty strong stimulus. But anyway, I just wanted to point that out, maybe in a different way, to clarify why they're different, 23 and 23B.
Credit. Senator Wilkowski.
Follow up. I guess I will ask. Mr. Deese is opposed to Senator Stedman. So you get to write off the $100 million? You get to take a tax credit. So in other words, you spend $100 million, you get to write off $20 million, let's say, if you get a 20% tax credit under here. But then you are able to depreciate it at the rate of $100 million? Is that?
Okay. Through the chair, Senator Wilkowski, under our production tax statute, there's no depreciation. Now, for spending the $100 million, if it was, say, it qualified for an 023A credit, you would get a 20% tax credit that you could offset against your production tax liability. Now, the way that you derive your production tax liability is you would take your value of the product sold, gross value at the point of production for the oil and gas. You would subtract from that all of your expenditures, whether they were capital or operating. Now, the capital does not have to be depreciated. It could be written off against that gross value in the year that it was incurred. So you get a production tax value, which the tax liability the tax rate is applied to in order to get the tax liability. So to the extent that you got this $100 million expenditure, you get the $20 million worth of credit. You also get whatever tax rate you're at, that same expenditure does give you some tax benefit because what it's doing is reducing that production tax value. Now, Senator Stedman described was, if it was this case that $100 million led to a negative production tax value, that negative production tax value could generate an 023B credit of 25%. So you could say that a dollar of expenditure, capital expenditure, if you're a company that doesn't have much revenue, could get, that dollar could generate 45% in terms of tax credit in that situation. But in any situation, a capital expenditure will get not only the 20% tax credit, but also will help to reduce that production tax value, which in turn reduces the production tax liability.
Continue, Mr. Deese.
Yes, sir. The next credit is the alternative tax credit for oil and gas exploration under AS 4355025. This credit is commonly referred to as the expiration credit. The credit is 30 to 40% of qualified expenditures, depending on well location and proximity to existing wells and unit boundaries. The qualified expenditures under this credit is certain expenses associated with seismic and geophysical exploration work and exploration well drilling. These same expenditures may also be part of what qualifies a taxpayer for NOL carry forward. Now, if a company claim this particular credit, those expenditures under 025 cannot be claimed under 023A. Okay? So even though it could be considered capital expenditures, they're not capital expenditures for the purpose of 023A.
Deese, could you give a relative emphasis in Alaska whether we're seeing more 025 or 023A credits?
I would say we've seen more 023A credits. 025 credits, typically projects, specific project-oriented activities, the drilling of exploration wells, or the conduction of seismic GNG, geological and geophysical activity. So it's a more narrow scope of activity under 025 than you will find under 023.
Senator Willekowski.
Thank you. In your charts, do you have the 02 amount of the 025 credits that have been taken and that are expected?
Yes. I do have.
They are further back in the presentation. We'll be going through all the actual amounts that have been claimed against each.
I was trying to find it.
Well, slide 18 has a little bit of expiration credits that have been applied against tax liabilities, and slide 22. Okay, next. Next, we're going to talk about the net operating loss carry forward credit under, we've talked about before, under AS 4355-023B. Again, that credit is 25%, a credit of 25% of a net operating loss. And again, a net operating loss is described as when situations where a company's revenues is exceeded by its lease expenditures for the year. Again, capital expenditures under 023A1 and A2, in addition to non-capital expenditures, can lead to a net operating loss. If a company does have this type of credit, they can convert the credit into a transferable tax credit certificate, which can be sold back to the state and transferred to another taxpayer to apply against a tax liability. The next credit is the transitional investment expenditure credit under.
Mr. Deese, we're about only one third of the way through the slides and about 50% of the way through the time. So if you could just kind of
speed it up,
high points, and get to, I believe, slide 16, and then we can start getting into some more of the policy issues as compared to definitional issues.
Okay. The TIE credits. Basically, it's a credit for expenditures that were incurred prior to PPT, the five-year period between March 31st, 2001 and April 1st, 2006. Company could get 10% of those capital expenditures. That particular credit was changed under ACES and could only apply to companies that did not have production prior to January 1st, 2008. Next. Under AS 4355-024, we have two types of credits. We have a new area development credit under 4355-024A. This credit is up to $6 million for a company that is currently producing from leases of properties outside of Cook Inlet, outside of the North Slope. This credit can only be applied against a tax liability, may not be converted to a transferable tax credit certificate or carried forward. It has to be used only against a tax liability for a year to the extent that you have a tax liability. And the credit right now has a sunset date of May 1st, 2016. Next slide. Under 4355024C, this is a small producer credit for companies producing less than 100,000 barrels per day of oil BTU equivalent. The credit is pro rata between 50. If a company is producing less than 50,000 barrels, they get the entire $12 million, and it's prorated down to zero at 100,000 barrels. The credit can only be applied against a tax liability. It expires in 2016. May not be converted to a transferable tax credit certificate or carry forward.
We don't need to go through all the details. You know, we can come back at a later date on some of these components. I think if we could get to like 16 quickly to.
Okay, the last two credits are the well lease expenditure credits under 023L was enacted last year. 40% of well lease expenditures in states south of 68 degrees north latitude. And the last credit is the Cook Inlet jackup rig credit under 025L, credit of up to $25 million for the first three unaffiliated persons drilling wells using the jackup rig. All right. Next slide, credits applied against the production tax liability. All credits may be applied against the production tax liability. Some credits may be converted into a transferable tax credit certificate. Slide 18, which I believe is the one you guys want to get to. So this is kind of a slide showing the activities that we've seen for credits applied against tax liability. And again, this is for those companies who have in their annual filings have a tax liability, and in the course of computing the net payments to the state have taken these particular amounts off the top of the tax liability. So in essence, this is money that did not come into state treasury, but were reduced from the amount that would have come into state treasury had they not been there.
So Mr. Deeds, for example, on the top line capital expenditure credit. So in addition to them deducting 100%, then this is the figures in that top column are the 20% that they additionally receive in credits.
Right.
The center will account.
Yeah, this is in millions? So it'd be 300?
Millions.
Okay. And then another question, Mr. Chair. Do you have any projections for beyond 2011?
Through the chair, Senator Wilkowski, I do not at this point.
Senator Wilkowski, through the chair. These are, again, based on what information is provided to us by the producers. So this is what they've provided.
And just following up, I know the Department of Revenue did projections for the next decade, and they relied on production figures for the next 9 or 10 years. So does the information exist? Does the department have that information?
Through the chair, Senator Wilkowski, we do receive longer-term projections on production. We apply a longer-term projection on the price of oil. But as far as the capital expense that a company is going to invest, we only receive that 1 year out.
Senator French.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I have a couple questions about the exploration credits. And to ask the question, I am referring to the chart that we spent a lot of time on that your agency provided regarding exploration wells in the North Slope. And I'm going back to 2008 when 16 wells were drilled, and I see in 2008 on your chart $55 million in exploration credits were applied for and refunded against a producer's tax liability. In 2009, the number you have there is $28 million, and the number of wells drilled that year, according to the Department of Revenue chart, is 9. And so that I can understand that relationship. It looks like about half the number of wells drilled, half the number of exploration credits taken. But then I don't understand what's happened in 2010, when the number's cut in half yet again. We go from 9 wells in 2009 to 4 wells in 2010, and yet I see a $34 million tax credit applied for, an increase actually from the year before. And then the year I really don't get is 2011. We've been had it pounded into our brains over and over that there's only one well, exploration well drilled in 2011, and yet I see a $20 million tax credit that we're estimating is going to be asked for and granted. And so I don't know if you've analyzed that trend or what light you can shed on that, but I'm puzzled by it.
Through the chair, Senator French, you cannot correlate this information with that chart you're seeing there in terms of wells drills. Now, what this chart is showing as far as exploration credits are concerned is when companies chose to take those certificates, either they purchased them from other companies or they had exploration activities themselves and they applied that against their tax liability. This does not encompass all of the activity in exploration credits. Okay, I have another chart that shows, now mind you, this chart only shows for those companies that had tax liability that applied these particular credits against that tax liability. Doesn't necessarily mean that this is either the year that this activity occurred or that these were the companies that actually drilled those wells. They could have purchased these certificates from non-producing companies, but this is what was projected. This is what actually happened and what's projected as the certificates we'll see applied against the tax liability.
Sure. But there's a time frame, is there not, between the timing of the expenditure and the life of the credit? That is, you just can't wait for 3 or 4 years and say, you know, we need to go grab a credit from this well we drilled a couple of years back. They've got to hurry on down and make that happen pretty swiftly, don't they?
Through the chair, Senator French, these credits don't expire. There's not a time frame in which they have to use them. Now, there was a time frame in which the companies that the explorers, if they had a credit and they wanted to cash it with the state, they wanted to cash out with the state, that was a 24-month reinvestment period. They had to go out and invest that amount of money in the state within a 24-month period after they applied for the credit in order for the state to refund that particular credit. That particular law changed last year also.
But just so we keep the record clear, that's not what we're talking about here, because these are all being applied against someone's
tax liability.
Yes. So just so we're clear, you're saying that you could have drilled a well in 2009, an exploratory well in 2009, and in 2011 be applying that expenditure against your tax liability.
What happens typically is, throughout the drilling season, typically in Alaska on the North Slope, drilling season is probably between October through March of a particular year. The companies have within six months after the end of the exploration activity to apply for a tax credit certificate for exploration, an 025 credit. The department audits that credit in full before issuing the credit. So you could have a two-year lag before the company actually get the tax credit certificate.
And what? These are the ones that are being applied against tax liability, but they could just as easily have been something that someone purchased. That is, Brooks Range goes out and drills a well. Brooks Range sells exploration credits to Conoco. Conoco applies them to their tax liability, and that's when you see it show up as a transaction.
Exactly.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Do you have any projections on when were the 2011 projections estimates done? That's question one. Question two is, in the Repsol announcement, they are saying they're going to start spending some of their $768 million this winter and on exploration wells, is my understanding. And have you revised your estimate on 2011?
Okay, I could, through the chair, Senator Wilkowski, I could speak to part of this. The $450 million that we have for fiscal year 2011 corresponds with what's in the revenue source book, the fall revenue source book that came out in 2010. Now, as far as revising the estimate, I'll let you speak to that. I mean, I know we're going to update the revenue source book in March.
Through the chair, Senator Wilkowski, I'm not sure if we revise the source or the projections in spring to that detail. I know we do the oil production and the oil price, but we'll have to get back to you with the depth that we revise the forecast to.
And then another question, Mr. Chair.
Follow up.
Yeah, so exploration credits, that's 025 credits? Yes.
Through the chair, Senator Wilkowski, yes.
And does that, my understanding is that by taking that credit, it requires companies to provide well data?
Through the chair, Senator Wilkowski, no, by taking that credit, it does not. If you're not the company that actually got the original credit, you do not have to. You know, if you purchase the credit from somewhere, from some other company, you do not have to provide that. The company that got the original credit has to provide the well data to DNR.
We need to move forward, so why don't we proceed to the next slide.
The next slide is just a graphical illustration of the previous slide. Next slide. Transferable tax credit certificates basically are issued to those companies that don't have a tax liability. They, because they can't take them against the tax liability, they apply with the department for these transferable tax credit certificates. We do a due diligence review on the 023 certificates and grant the certificates. We also have maintained the audit rights to go back and audit the activity. These certificates may be transferred to another taxpayer or cash with the state. Next slide. So this slide kind of shows what's happened for those explorers who have applied for transferable tax credit certificates with the department.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator French.
Thank you. A matter for you to follow up on, Mr. Dees, but the number you have here under 2008 exploration credit is 85.5
yes.
million here, and in an earlier presentation this year to the Senate Finance Committee, that number was 38.5. And so when you have a chance, maybe you can send a note around to us about why that changed by $50 million between these two presentations.
Through the chair, Senator French, I may have been, it could be a difference between reporting on the calendar year and a fiscal year basis, but I know I did go and look at the numbers. I know my total on that earlier presentation was a little bit less also. So, I'll reconcile that for you.
Someday, some poor historian may read through those records, slogging through the history of tax changes in Alaska, and they'd want to know.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Never know. Poor thing.
Yeah, you pity him.
Is there a question, Mr.
Senator Wilkowski?
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. Just comparing the slide on 22 versus the slide on 18, looking at 2009 expiration credits, you had $29 million applied to tax liability, and then you had $56.6 million in tax credits. And then in 2010, you had $34 million applied to tax liability, and then you had a big spike to $99.5 million in tax credits. Maybe, can you just explain to me what's going on there, how to interpret that?
On slide 18, through the chair, Senator Wilkowski, on slide 18, we have tax credits that have actually that are actually being applied to tax liabilities, right? Slide 22 shows what's being applied, the applications we have received from various explorers. These are not actually tax credit certificates. This is what they have applied for in terms of their request for receiving credits for the expenditures they have made. So these are not final credits here. This is what they've applied for in these years.
That's, you're referencing slide 22.
Yes.
If I could just briefly follow up. So when you say, so in 2010, is it fair to say there was $99.5 million worth of production tax credits claimed, applied for that year?
Yes.
So the expiration was done in 2010.
Now this is fiscal year 2010, right? So the expiration would have been done, 2010 would have ended June 30th of, 2010 would have ended June 30th of 2010. Expiration would have been done the period between probably October of 2009 and March of 2010. So we would have, actually, let me back up. Expiration would have been done between 2008 and 2009. We typically receive the applications for expiration activity around September of the years when we get slammed with a lot of them because, you know, the expiration period typically runs between October and March. So at March, this activity occurred between October of 2008 to March of 2009. We would have received the applications in September of 2009, which would have been the first quarter of fiscal year 2010. Basically. So this is probably catching the tail end of all that expiration activity that was happening in Alaska during that period of high oil prices back in 2008.
Please continue, Mr. Deese. Yeah.
Next slide. Next slide is a graphical illustration of tax credits claimed by fiscal year. Now, slide 24 is a information that shows the actual cash that the state has not only issued in the form of the actual tax credit certificates that the state has issued and the actual payments the state has paid out for those particular tax credit certificates. So inception to date, we have actually issued $1.1 billion worth of tax credit certificates, transferable tax credit certificates. We've actually paid out in the form of cash $851 million. We've had transferred or applied to taxes $182 million worth of tax credit certificates. And as of this particular date, we have about $73 million of tax credit certificates outstanding.
And when you use the term outstanding, meaning not as yet applied?
Not as yet applied or as, you know, not as yet requested cash payment from the state. So if you want to kind of compare to look at the total amount of, if you will, what the state have paid out or granted in the form of tax credits. You compare slide 18, or slide 18 is what's been actually withheld against tax liabilities. Slide 24 here will tell you exactly what's actually out there in the form of outstanding credits or what's actually been paid in the form of cash.
Senator Baker.
You know, we come this far, I want to ask you a question. I don't know what your background is other than in Alaska, but is there any other entity in the United States that has near as lucrative credit system for exploration as the state of Alaska has, to your knowledge?
Through the chair, Senator Wagner, to my knowledge, I don't know of any other tax system in the United States that has the same similar type system.
Thank you.
Next, we're going to talk about cash refunds, and cash refunds are governed by Section 028 of AS 4355. Basically, in order for the a company to be able to sell their tax credit certificate to the state, they must not have a tax liability owed in current or past years. They must have no more than 50,000 barrels of oil per day of production. And there used to be a requirement, like I mentioned before, that they must show a subsequent investment in the state within 24 months of applying for the certificates, but now that was repealed in 2010. So a company can get a tax credit certificate and turn around and request cash refund from the state. This is just similar to the information shown on slide 24. This shows the amount of tax credits the state has purchased back from taxpayers or from explorers through February of this year.
And by that, again, meaning purchase, the state of Alaska has paid out $851.6 million.
Yes, monies that were appropriated from the tax credit fund on the general fund.
Senator Wilkowski.
Yeah, so there's a huge jump in 2011, and that's just through the first month of 2011. Why, can you give us some perspective on that?
We're talking fiscal year, so we're actually talking from July 1st of 2010. And remember what happened last year when that requirement for the 24-month reinvestment period went away. So as of July 1st, everybody who was holding a tax credit certificate, well, just about everybody who was paying attention, came forward and this next slide just gives kind of a history of the tax credit, oil and gas tax credit fund. And just kind of show what the balance of that fund was as of, I think it was February 4th, that's the last time I updated this. The next slide kind of gives a graphical illustration of a combination of production tax credits paid and applied against taxes each year. As you can see, 2011, and we do have a 2012 estimate here, our estimates. 2012 includes, as part of cash, we're estimating that the Cook Inlet jackup rig credit might be paid out in fiscal year 2012, which does start in July 1st of 2011.
Senator Stedman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I just want to make a comment. You know, when we look at this chart here that combines both the credits that are cashed out and then the ones that are applied against the taxes, a lot of times in the building, the only discussion is the ones that are cashed, not the ones that are applied against taxes. And even when you look at the revenue source book, although they've been altering that and updating it to make it clear to the readers about the amount being applied against taxes, so it's a little clearer. It's very common to miss that whole lower bar. It's orange in our chart, and for those at home, it's dark. But the last bar on the lower end is $463 million, and 12 is the estimate. And that's a sizable amount of credits not to recognize. So I think in the building, things are getting more cognizant of these two pieces, but it's very, very easy and common for our colleagues to miss the whole lower bar in the discussions.
Senator Wilikowski.
Thank you. When I asked you before about whether you had any data on tax credits beyond 2011, you said no, and then we're seeing there you do have some projected data. I'm just wondering, is that something different?
Through the chair, Senator Wilikowski, if we said 2011, I'm sorry we misspoke. It's for the next, this is for the next fiscal year. So I'm not sure when exactly we would be receiving information. Our production forecaster, Frank Molly, when he goes through the exercise to discuss future production with the producers, but that would be 1 year out for the tax credit system and what their capital expenses are looking like. But as far as the production side of the equation, that's where Frank Molly would be looking further into the future.
Senator Wagner had a question.
Yeah, just kind of a statement where you have the $67.5 million show for the jack-up rate credits. I don't think you're going to see that happen in 1 year. That'll happen over either 2 or 3 years. So that needs to be split out, because remember, those each of those wells has to be drilled by a non-affiliated company. So therefore, it's very, very unlikely that they'd all be drilled the same year.
Through the chair, Senator Wagner, we agree. This is one of the estimates that we know exactly how much it will be for the three actions that will take place: 20, 25, 22.5, 20 million. So. We agree.
What is the effect, you know, the caption of this total state stimulus, and so what is the effect on a company's bottom line of this state stimulus?
What is the effect on the company's bottom line? Through the chair, well, for the companies that are, you know, applying the credits against their tax liability, it's a somewhat lower tax bill, I guess. For the companies that don't have a tax liability, it's a cash flow issue more than anything. And then maybe it's in terms of bottom line, maybe it's better economics for a project.
For example, in the 2011, so that it's understood, the 430 is in the top bar and the 450 in the bottom bar, both are cumulatively earned in that 1 year, with 430 applied to the company's bottom line for that tax year.
Yes.
450 actually would be applied to the tax liability.
Right.
The 430 on top is the cash amount that the explorers, the smaller folks who don't have a liability, would cash in.
Yeah. And basically, the 430 is... If you look at the previous slide, which showed 2011 through February 4th, $299 million. We were projecting that through the end of fiscal year 2011, that number would be $430 million. With the additional credits certificates, we will be issuing. Between now and the end of the fiscal year, and the likely amount of requests for refunds.
Mr. Chairman?
Senator Stitt.
Another way to think about that is you got $880 million in that column in 2011, and that's, you know, all else being equal, we'd have that in the Treasury. And if when that money goes out, it's either going to end up in the industry's hands or end up in the federal government's hands. Only on the, you know, the 30,000-foot view, there's only three players: the state, the feds, and the industry. It impacts the Treasury. There's no doubt about that. Either is an outflow on our part or an inflow on their part. Looking at it from the sovereign side, the industry would have a different opinion. The way they look at the money, but there's still only the same three players at the table.
Next slide is estimate of capital expenditure by year through 2012.
Chairman.
Senator French.
To me, this is one of the more remarkable slides in your presentation. I don't know how else to read it except to say that since we passed ACES in 2007, capital spending on the North Slope has gone up 50%. I'm pleased that you put the slide in your presentation. I don't know. I guess we'd have to take a look at some other oil basins to see how much their capital expenditures have gone up in 4 or 5 years. But that seems to me like a pretty healthy rise in capital expenditures. I guess, you know, I mean, I get lots of emails, and you know, you sort of hear the talk, on radio and so forth, that, you know, ACES killed investment on the North Slope. But this is living, factual proof to the contrary, isn't it? That capital expenditures are going up and going up at a fairly healthy clip on the North Slope since we passed ACES in 2007. I guess my question, that's a comment, you can respond if you'd like, but my question is does your 2011-2012 estimates include the fantastic news that Repsol, one of the largest corporations in the world, is going to invest $768 million on the North Slope?
Through the chair, Senator French, we do not address that in our current forecast. As we understand it, that is potential exploration under the current tax system. We've also heard that that if this bill were to take effect, that could be a larger number. I've seen no details on it, but again, that's been alluded to. And again, they can speak to that if they so choose. As far as the 2012 number and all those numbers, we agree that the tax credit system is a very healthy system in the state. The other side of the equation is the production curve that continues to go down. What that production curve would have looked like had this not taken place, you know, we don't know. You can't go back and say it, you know, exactly what could have happened. But that's the whole point of the tax credit system and the legislation that we're currently working on, is to flatten out or increase the production side. So this has certainly gone a long way to getting us there, and hopefully we can continue to flatten out that production curve.
Senator Steadman, thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Maybe we could have Mr. Dees kind of explain to the public the graph a little bit, especially 11 and 12, or is this calendar year, fiscal year, and where these projections, like in 12 of $3 billion, $137 million, and the 11 number of $2.7 billion came from to reference its existence, I guess.
Through the chair, Senator Stantman, these are projections based on, I believe they were calendar year. Fiscal year projections. Based on information received from taxpayers and explorers.
Pardon me, did you say that they're from what kind of documentation? Can you help me a little bit explain how you derived that $3.1 billion? Do you pick up the phone and call the three majors, or do you, what's the process?
Sherry, explain that.
We'd like to bring up Sherry Nienheis, a petroleum economist, who could answer that in more detail.
She's our expert.
Welcome again to Senate Resources. Please state your name and affiliation, and if you can answer Senator Steadman's inquiry, please do so.
Yes, Mr. Chairman. My name is Sherry Nienheis. I'm a petroleum economist with the Department of Revenue. We do actually ask for projections from operators. We ask for projections in October of every year. We for our fall forecast, and also again in the spring. So we received projections this go around in March, and we will be updating our cost forecast with those projections.
So, Mr. Chairman?
Yes.
So these were numerics given you by the industry in fall for your fall release that we've
we've all been working it here on the budget for FY12. And then we're going to get an update, a spring update, the end of this month, like before we adjourn out. And then what I'm hearing you say that then you'll have more data on 11. Of course, you picked up, you know, some months that are actually calendared by. And then update the projection, the projection for the rest of 11, and then the projection for 12. And then that is as far out as you reach. You just ask the industry a one-year lookout or 18 months or?
Senator Stedman, through the chair, we actually ask for five years of data. So for this spring, we asked for 11 through 15.
Follow up. Yes, Mr. Chairman, if I could. So could we look at that data also, or?
Senator Stedman, through the chair, certainly we could provide that to you.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. Or to the chairman, he'll dispense it.
So if I'm understanding what you're saying, last fall you requested information through 2016, so that information could be provided to the committee?
Mr. Chairman, that's correct.
Senator Willikowski.
Do you have tax credit information, or are you able to derive sort of tax credit information based on your request?
Senator Willikowski, through the chair, we do derive it from the information that we receive. Yeah. That's correct.
Senator French.
And maybe I didn't understand, or to what extent does this chart correlate with exploration activity? Like, just for example, today I read about Brooks Range saying they're going to spend another $200 million next year on one of their developments near Kuparik. Would that be picked up by this projection, or is that separate?
Senator French, through the chair, we try and keep up abreast of changes. As you know, there's a number of changes that happen right after we make our forecast. For example, the Liberty project was delayed. Now the announcements from Repsol, the $768 million, we will incorporate that into our forecast. Into our next forecast. Now, my understanding is that might not be all being spent in one year. It might take place over several years, and so we need to, somehow incorporate that into our cost forecast, but we will certainly do that.
But this, just for the general public and for my basic understanding, this is a sort of a snapshot going forward of not only industry activity in Kuparik and Alpine and Prudhoe, but also in the exploration areas as well. This is sort of like a snapshot of future spending on the North Slope, whether it be exploration or capital spending.
Senator French, through the chair, that's correct.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Senator Willikowski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm going to try to say this in the absolutely most respectful way that I can, but as we've proceeded in these hearings, there has been some information provided to us by the administration which has not been accurate, and I would just strongly urge the administration to provide us. If you don't know the answer to questions, please just say you don't know. Don't provide us with inaccurate information or misrepresent information, because it is not helpful for us in our decision-making process.
Through the chair, Senator Willikowski, I do apologize. Fortunately for folks in my position, we have very qualified people like Sherry that have been around for a lot longer than I have, and we do rely heavily on them. And again, I do apologize.
For purposes of the viewer at home, if one looks at the $3,137,000,000 for the estimated capital expenditure FY12, then applying the capital credit, then that would translate to a little over $600 million in the reduction of the bottom line.
Senator Pasquin, actually, that would not reduce necessarily the taxes paid, because some of those capital expenditures would be expended by companies that do not have a tax liability. So that's where the difference in the tax credits comes into play. There are tax credits that are applied against a tax liability, and there are tax credits for which certificates are sought and then later refunded or sold to other companies.
One way or another, it reduces the income to the state by a little over $600 million, whether it's directly in the taxes or through net or operating loss carry forward or a cash payoff.
That's correct, Mr. Chairman.
Senator Wagner.
I need some clarification, because you made a reference that I didn't think I'd hear again. You said, or sold to other companies. Under what circumstance, if any, would a company that doesn't have a tax liability accrue credits and then sell them to another company instead of just going to the state to get reimbursed?
Senator Wagner, through the chair, I can't speak for companies and why they would do that, but we have seen some tax credits sold to other companies and used. But since a lot of the restrictions were lifted over the years, you might recall that we had some restrictions on the amount of tax credits a company could have refunded, and now that restriction has been lifted, and now the restriction that they reinvest has been lifted. So as restrictions on that get lifted, then you have less likelihood that they would sell it to another company.
Please continue. We have about a little over 5 minutes, so I'd like to get through this, and then particularly on that there's an additional graph that we have some comments on.
Okay, this graph requested to show progressivity index versus production tax credits. This first graph shows progressivity that was collected for these years or projected to be collected versus the tax credits that were applied against tax liability for those years.
Mr. Chairman, I don't understand. If I could just quickly, thank you. Progressivity index, what does that mean?
The progressivity portion of the tax of the production.
So that's the amount we collected, not from the base rate, but from the progressivity amount. Thank you.
This slide shows a comparison of the progressivity portion of the tax versus the total production tax credits, either applied against tax liability or cashed out during a particular fiscal year. So as you can see in 2007, the tax credits exceeded the progressivity. In 2008, 2009, 2010, progressivity exceeds the tax. And then based on the oil price for 2011, projected for 2011, and the projected credits for 2011, the credits exceed the projected tax in 2012.
Senator Stedman.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I think this is one of the questions I'd asked Mr. Dees earlier. when you look at the 12 projection, I think, as I recall, progressivity is scheduled to, or estimated to bring in about $700 million, where our combined credits were 860 some odd, and you take 60 out for Cook Inlet, you're around 800 million. So collectively then, under that scenario, the industry would pay zero progressivity because the credits would wash out progressivity, similar to 11. But I think as you get under the surface, you find there's a big disparity in the companies. But we don't have that ability to go down in there. You know, we end up having to work over the aggregate, so it makes our job a little more difficult. But clearly, 11 and forecasted 12 and 11 might change with a big spike in oil price. But under this chart, when it was made, it would appear that there'd be no progressivity collectively paid for 2 years.
We were looking at this tax rate with the graph, and this was part of a February 21 presentation this year. And the top line is a depiction of the progressivity with credits applied. And I was wondering if you could prepare for the committee using FY12 numbers. You know, this has $20 upstream costs and transport costs of $6, but if you could for FY12 create a graph using those projected numbers for so that we can see. And I think that this in follow-up or just conclusion, it shows that at various prices of crude that when credits are applied, that the production tax rate falls below the 25% base rate. Is that accurate, Mr. Dees?
Yes.
Chairman Passman, that's correct. This is the effective tax rate, right. So you are correct.
Senator McGuire.
Thank you. And just kind of an overarching chart that I'd like to see that we talked about at the beginning of these hearings, in the $1.1 billion in tax credits that we saw today on page 29 of our presentation given to companies, that some of which ended up with no tax liability, did any of it lead to production? And I guess that's what I want to see, is for the tax credits that we've paid out, $1.1 billion over that time period, what has led to production, what has led to exploration. My goal is to get us to production. We need to fill up the pipeline. Obviously, exploration is a part of that, but we're out of balance somehow, and so I'd like to see some modeling that shows that, please.
Through the chair, we'd be pleased to, Senator McGuire.
Thank you.
All right, to the Department of Revenue, thank you for showing up. In particular, Mr. Dees, thank you for showing up and giving us this information on credits. Our Friday meeting on March 18th will start at 3:30. Mr. Bob George of Gaffney & Klein will offer a presentation on petroleum fiscal system design. So that should be an important meeting, and we hope Gavel to Gavel can join us on Friday as well. So we thank Gavel to Gavel. With that, meeting adjourned.